season, has the interception, and it's ball game Titans.
Welcome to PodsQB. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Hey, Mike. So how you doing this week, pal?
Good, good. Yourself?
Not bad. I got to, as I seem to always say on the show, I was in attendance at the game last week. Obviously, with the Ticats playing in Toronto, I went down to the name-redacted, I'll call it the Sky Dome. I don't call it by its corporate name because I think it's stupid. Mm-hmm. But I went down to the Sky Dome to watch the game. Probably the last time I'll ever go to the Sky Dome to watch a football game, with the Argos moving to BMO next year and the chances of the Ticats playing a playoff game this year being slim, especially after the outcome of Friday's contest. But beforehand, a group of friends and I were looking at tickets, and man, oh man, our ticket prices in Toronto really super steep. Midfield, second deck, we're like $100. So we ended up getting tickets through less than legal means, if you will. And we ended up paying $40 a ticket. We sat exactly where we wanted to with a bunch of Ticat fans. It was awesome. But people want to kind of wonder why Toronto is having such attendance issues. It's definitely the ticket prices, man. They're just way out of whack. Just insane. Completely insane.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. You know, it just shouldn't be that high for a team that doesn't draw well. I mean, you want to get more people into the stadium. You want to get more people watching your product. You should lower the ticket prices a bit, especially when it's a stadium that has less than desirable sight lines in the lower deck. It's not made for football. So I think they're having the same problem in BC, which comes down to the same owner, Braley. I think that might be part of the problem. He just charges too much for tickets. And Braley's done a lot of good things for this league. He cares about it a lot, but I think his time has passed. And I'm glad that Toronto will have new owners next year. And I think that if he keeps saying that he has many options to sell the BC Lions to different owners, then I think you should get on that right away, because the attendance is dropping and dropping in BC as well. They had 19,000 for the last game. So I think it's time for him to move on.
It does really seem like BC is going to be the next problem area for this league, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It really does.
It's a shame, because we're finally at a place where Ottawa's back in the league and they're doing great when it comes to attendance and all that stuff. And Hamilton's doing great when it comes to attendance. And these are the teams that, you know, notoriously, including Toronto, are sort of the lesser lights of the CFL when it comes to financial stability. And it looks like all these teams are about to get, if not profitable, at least healthy and in a good situation. And then all of a sudden, bam, BC seems to be just kind of in shambles. And it's a shame, because, you know, that's a great fan base out there when they want to be involved. It just seems like Vancouver, I don't know if they've soured on the Lions or if they're just not used to, like, let's be honest, this BC team this year is not very good.
Yeah, they weren't very good last year either.
Yeah, so. And I think we both sort of predicted them to be pretty bad this year as well, earlier in the year. So this is not anything that's surprising to either of us when it comes to their on-field product. It's just a shame that we can't ever get to sort of that place where every team is just churning out money, or, you know, it's the league is still healthy, the league is still good, it's going to be good, but I just wish all the teams could be at least above par at the same time, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I thought that when BC Plate was renovated, that, you know, the BC Lions were getting 30,000, 35,000 fans to, like, most of the games, because I've never been there, but I've seen on TV that it's a beautiful stadium, and I've heard great things about it. So, you know, they should be getting bigger crowds, not losing their fan base. So it just doesn't, I think they need new blood in ownership. I think they need to market the team better, same as Toronto. We just need new blood in owners in the CFL on a couple teams, maybe even in Montreal as well, because Wettenhall is getting up there as well.
The BC game yesterday, you know, the Sunday game against Ottawa, that was, in my opinion, a really stupid scheduling decision. BC is so close to Seattle. Seattle is football mad. BC, Winnipeg, or well, not, sorry, not Winnipeg, Vancouver fans have sort of adopted the Seahawks because they're so good. And it was opening weekend of the NFL, and I know you and I are big CFL fans. I like the NFL as well. It's. I think we've talked about this before. I don't like the idea of having to compete for my football viewership. Mm-hmm. And I know the CFL can be successful on Sunday. The Ticats have a couple Sunday games coming up, and I'll be watching those or in attendance for those, either or. I just don't like the idea of opening weekend competing with the NFL. That just seemed like a really poor decision on the part of the CFL schedule makers.
Do you want them to have doubleheader on Friday, doubleheader on Saturday?
It's tough. Like, I know there's really no, that's sort of my problem. There's no real good solution, because, yeah, the doubleheader on Friday probably wouldn't have been very good. It probably would have led to worse attendance in Toronto, because you probably would have had to bump that game up to 7 o'clock as opposed to 7:30 when it went by itself. So there really is no,
because, I mean, you got Thursday night, the NFL falls a game on Thursday night, right?
Yep. So yep.
You'd have to go doubleheaders on Friday and Saturday each week. And I don't know how that would work out with the scheduling.
Maybe for 1 week, maybe you do a tripleheader on Saturday. The Winnipeg-Saskatchewan game didn't kick off in the East time zone until 3:30, or no, 6:30, I mean. So I know Winnipeg's an hour difference from here, so that would have been a 5:30 kickoff there, I guess. You could have moved that to a 1 o'clock kickoff.
Could have, you know what I mean? Like a hockey day in Canada type thing that they do with the triple header, but I just don't know if TSN would want to do that. You know, 9 hours of CFL football. I don't know if the ratings would drop. I don't know if many people would stick around for, you know, 9 hours of football.
Yeah, and that would be sort of my issue with it, is if you reach a saturation point where even hardcore fans like you or I might tune out in that third game. There's no perfect solution. I just, if there's one weekend to avoid Sunday, I just think it's NFL opening weekend. Any other Sunday, you know what, go nuts. I just think it's such a massive, massive weekend for NFL. There's a lot of NFL fans in Canada, and, you know, opening weekend is a big weekend. Like, we had people over here at my house to watch the games, and we were clicking back and forth, because that's what we do. You can play Sunday games. I got no problem with that. You know, playoff games are on Sunday. The Grey Cups on Sunday. I never miss any of those. Just not opening weekend. That's the only one I would stay away from if I was a CFL.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Let's move on to the game itself. The Ticats went into Toronto and won a close one, something they hadn't done all season. They beat the Argos 35-27. That's their first single-digit victory of the season. They had just been blowing teams out left and right when they won, and the close ones were the ones that they were having a hard time finding victories in. So the Ticats now 8-3. They are two games clear of both the Ottawa Red Blacks and Toronto Argonauts, and technically they're three games clear of the Argos, because the Argos would have to win more games than the Cats to jump them first place. Just what do you think about the game on Friday night, buddy?
Wasn't their best game, you could say that, but I thought every time the Argos got close, I thought the Argos played a pretty good game, you know, sticking around with the Ticats. Every time the Argos got close, I thought that the Ticats responded well with a long drive, you know, either getting a field goal or a touchdown. I like how they responded to a little bit of adversity, which they haven't really faced that much this season. So, you know, it wasn't perfect, but a win's a win, and I'm pretty happy with being 8-3 right now.
I feel the exact same way. I was super impressed with the way the Argos played on Friday. They put some wrinkles in their offense that I thought were just tremendous. The Brandon Whitaker touchdown is first when they were, I think it was first and goal from the three, maybe, or maybe, I can't remember what the down or yards was. And they did sort of a pitch, a misdirection pitch, and he got the corner and scored. Usually in those situations, you're going plunge over the goal line, or you're trying to just force up the middle. Thought it was a really smart play. And they had another running play where it was a lot of misdirection and a guard pulling. I can't remember. I think it was in the third quarter, but I'm not entirely sure. I'd have to go back and watch. I was just super, I watched and I was like, that was a great play call. I think Toronto really took that butt whooping on Labor Day and sort of came back and tried to show Hamilton that they can compete with them. Obviously, in the end, it didn't matter. The Ticats won the game and proved to be the better team, as we knew they would be. But hat tip to the Argos for a game well played, I thought.
Yeah, you don't see that a little, you know, I think it was a fake handoff in the middle and then a pitch to the outside for the touchdown. I think CFL teams need to do that more often. You don't see a lot of creativity near the goal line. You know, it's a lot of the times it's just plunge, just keep diving forward with your quarterback, and that's not working all the time these days. So, you know, it was a great play call. It worked to perfection. He got the outside, a touchdown. So I agree with you totally that Toronto played a great game and stuck around with the Ticats, which is pretty much the best team in the league right now.
But enough about the Argos. This is not an Argos podcast. We're not here to fluff them up. Let's talk about the Cats. Matt Coates, a young player, Canadian player, doesn't see a lot of action, got his first touchdown, and man, did that seem to ignite the bench. Everyone seemed to be so excited for Coates scoring. He's a guy who, like I said, doesn't get a lot of balls thrown his way, but he just seems so beloved by his team. He must be a super hard worker, as I've heard, and just great sort of thing to see happen for a young guy, get his first CFL touchdown and just have everyone mob him like that.
Yeah, he seemed to be pretty happy when he got in the end zone. So whenever I've seen Coates get in the game, I've been impressed. I think he's a really good receiver, you know. I think he could be an up-and-comer in this offense. He could be a starter, like, later on for years to come. So you know, I think he's a local kid. I think he played for the Hamilton Hurricanes, so I'm sure he was really stoked on the touchdown.
And he's, you know, he's been put in a tough position. He's filling in for Andy Fantu, who's one of the best Canadian receivers in the CFL, so he's making the most of his opportunities, and it brought a smile to my face to see him score in the end zone, just see how everyone reacted. That's pretty much my takeaway from that.
Yeah, it was great to see.
Speaking of great to see, how about that weird fumble? I'm calling it the fumble play, where I don't know who from the Argos scooped up a fumble, isn't touched, starts sort of celebrating the fact that he got a fumble, and you see Ray Holly smack it out of his hands and Peter Diakowski recover it. Maybe the most heads-up play I have ever seen in a football game. There was no whistle. Guys were playing. Just super, super great play by Holly.
Yeah, it's a very smart play by him. Pretty dumb play by the Argos player. I mean, you got to know, you've been playing football your whole life probably. You got to know if you know, you're on the ground, you don't get touched, the play's still going. You know, he didn't hear a whistle, and he was hot-dogging it, and it cost the team. So really dumb play by him. Really smart play by Holly.
Anything stick out for you in Friday's contest?
Well, I thought that Holly, you know, he didn't have great numbers. I think he was 11 for 51 rushing, but I thought that it was his best game being the running back for the Ticats so far.
I'm in complete agreement with you on that. It looks like that tail end of the Labor Day game sort of carried over, and he hit the holes hard when they were there. He's not a dancer. He tries to just, he's a north-south runner, you know what I mean? He wants to hit the hole and get through there, and I was suitably impressed with him too. I'm starting to wonder if maybe this is the beginning of a rushing attack for the Ticats. It doesn't have to be one that where they rush for 150 yards a game or anything, but if they can get sort of 5 yards a carry out of Ray Holly every time he touches the ball, that's going to make this offense even more dangerous.
Yeah, I liked what I saw from him. I think he's going to improve as we go along here. I'm still kind of surprised that Grigsby, you know, isn't getting more touches, but they seem to really like Holly, like we've touched on in previous shows. I just want to say that another block punt by the Ticats. I mean, this seems to be happening on a game-to-game basis now. So it's just, you know, that really helps the team. And I just hope it continues, because it's a big momentum switch when they can get a block punt, especially deep in the end like they did against the Argos last week.
Every week it seems special teams, whether it's Brandon Banks or, like you mentioned, punt blocks, they're doing something on special teams week in, week out to help this team win. And I think that's what's separating them from the rest of the league. They're getting plays from all three phases. And I don't think any other team has made as many impact special teams plays this season as the Ticats. Heck, the other eight teams in the CFL combined might not have made as many special teams impact plays as the Ticats have so far in 2015.
Totally agree. I just, you know, once again, too many penalties for the Ticats. 14 penalties for 105 yards, I think. You know, that really needs to come down. It's just unacceptable. If they want to be the best team in the league, the penalties have to come down, because they could come and bite them on the ass later in the season or in the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Why do you think they just can't seem to stay disciplined? They're just always taking penalties. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. You know, Austin, I'm sure, preaches discipline, and it just doesn't seem to be getting through to these guys. You know, they're taking just stupid penalties, and they got it down to about 12 a couple weeks ago, and I was like, yeah, that's still too many. I'd like to see it drop by 5, and then it went up by 5 last week. I think there were 17 penalties. And now this week, 14. So it's just, they got to get out of the teens with the penalties. That's just way too many. And speaking of penalties, the Argos, that's what killed them. I mean, I think they had 16 penalties. 30 penalties in a game is just, it's not good. So I think the Argos, their downfall that game was penalties and turnovers, and that's what killed them.
What did you think of the play of Zach Caleros? I was sort of, I don't think he had a bad game, and I think I was having a hard time trying to pin if he was great, if he was good, if he was bad. I'm wondering if I was sort of grading him off of what he did on Monday when he had that massive game against Toronto on Labor Day. He had a good game. Like, he threw for 200 and some odd yards. He had 2 touchdown passes. He had the bad interception. His completion percentage was good. Do you think maybe we're just coming to expect, or maybe it's just me, from Zach Caleros?
I'm expecting him to, like, every drive I expect a long drive, a lot of completed passes. You know, I thought that he had some lulls in the game against Toronto, but I also think that he responded well to every scoring drive by Toronto. So it wasn't his best game. He was 22 of 31, 254 yards, 2 touchdowns. He actually had some rushing yards too. He had 30 rushing yards, which helped the cause a lot too. Like you said, that bad interception on the first drive. But yeah, it wasn't his his best game, but it also wasn't a bad game from him either. So it's hard to replicate a 400-yard passing game and 4 touchdowns and no interceptions. So, you know, I'll take it. He got the win. So maybe too high of expectations each week. This is pretty good. 254 yards, 2 touchdowns. You can't complain.
I would be remiss if we didn't bring up sort of the what has sort of become the story of the game, and that is the sideline altercation between Kent Austin and Dave Stalla. To be perfectly honest with you, I think it was just stupid. I don't really know what Kent Austin was thinking. He later apologized and has since been fined, I believe it was $5,000 for it, which is well deserved. There were people out there calling for his head, calling for suspensions, calling for him to be banned for life. That's ridiculous. It was what seemed like a momentary lapse in judgment, and I think the fine is more than enough for punishment. I just don't understand. It was just dumb. Just plain dumb.
Austin sometimes can get, his emotions can get the best of him. I didn't really believe what I saw when I first saw it. I had to rewind the, DVR thing. I had to go back and look at it because it's just unprofessional, uncalled for. I guess Stalla gave Banks a little bump on the sidelines and then Austin kind of threw his shoulder into him. You know, I don't condone it. I partially understand it because it's his team and he was just trying to stand up for, you know, one of his players, but it just can't happen. If it was another team, I would be totally ripping them. So I can't just stand back and say that, you know, I don't have a problem with it because it's my favorite team. So it just not cool at all, and I'm sure that it will never happen again with Austin.
Yeah, I can't see it happening again either. Dave Stalla, however, and this is in no way trying to mitigate what Austin did, I think we here in Hamilton, especially when he's here, sort of defended him when he acted like a bit of a dick. Mm. I remember there was a bottle squirting incident in Montreal when he was here, and he just seems to be one of those players that rubs people the wrong way, maybe gets under your skin a little bit. That in no way justifies what Ken Austin did. That was absolutely unacceptable and anything like that. But it's not like Dave Stalla is the most innocent guy on the planet when it comes to interactions such as these.
I agree. It's done with. It's over. It's not going to happen again. It was unprofessional. Now we should move on.
So let's get into how wrong we were in our bowl predictions, which seems to be the mantra every week. You had Luke Tasker going for over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns, which was a pretty bold prediction, and he didn't do too poorly, 89 yards and a touchdown. So you were off, but again, Tasker still had a great game, so I'm sure neither of us are complaining, especially when he's on my fantasy team that apparently this week scored like 279 points. And put the wood to poor Joe's team. Anyway, just want to throw that out there because my fantasy team is running away with our league right now. And I had Ray Holly for over 80 yards and a touchdown. And like we discussed earlier, he had a pretty good game, 11 carries for 51 yards, but he didn't get into the end zone. I'll still take what Ray Holly did too. So we might have been wrong on both these bold predictions, but I'm sure as happy with how both players did.
Yeah, I think Holly might add some receiving yards too, so add that to his best game as a tight end. So hopefully it's keeps going up from here for Holly.
Yeah, and we know Tasker's going to keep playing as well as he's playing. He's just been on fire since he got back into that lineup.
So reliable. He's one of my favorite. He is my favorite player on the Ticats. So I'm just a huge Tasker fan. He just shows up every game and does what he does. He's just a very good, reliable player.
There was a section in that game, I believe it was 3 consecutive pass plays. Caleros hit Tasker and he picked up 3 first downs.
Yeah, it was start of the third, I believe.
Yeah, I'm super impressed with this guy.
Him and Caleros just have a great connection. It started last year and just keeps building and building. And hopefully they play together for years to come and they can be like a McManus-Flutie type connection or just like a legendary connection for the Ticats.
Oh, that's big shoes to fill, but with the way these two guys are playing, you might not be far off on that, friend.
I hope I'm right.
So there was a little bit of news coming out of Hamilton this week. You familiar with Enoch Mwamba?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, apparently he was in Hamilton on Saturday having a visit. He just recently was cut by the Indianapolis Colts of the National Football League. He was a former number one overall pick in the draft by Winnipeg, spent 3 seasons there. Got better every year. 2013, he was a division all-star and a league all-star. He had 106 tackles. I believe he was Winnipeg's nominee for most outstanding player, most outstanding Canadian, most outstanding defensive player. A difference maker. He was a middle linebacker with Winnipeg. Man, if the Cats can get this guy in here. Apparently, Hamilton is one of 3 teams that are essentially still in the running for his services, with Mwamba visiting BC. And obviously, Winnipeg's going to make a huge push to get him back there. Man, this would be a huge get for the Ticats.
Yeah, I don't know who would be pushed aside to get him playing time, but he's a special player, one of the best linebackers in the league if he's in the league. So, and he's a Canadian, so it would be huge for the ratio. It'd be huge for the team. He'd be a great addition. I still have lots of football left in him, so I'd be stoked if he signed with the Ticats.
My gut tells me that he's a middle linebacker, and Taylor Reed's a middle linebacker, so we'd probably push Reed. Although Mwamba is not a guy who is afraid to play special teams. He had like 18 or so special teams tackles his final year in Winnipeg when he was there, you know, all world defensive everything. So even as a starter, he's not afraid to get out there and play specials. And Hamilton, I believe, has a ton of top tier Canadian talent about to hit free agency. I know Fantuz is in his last year of his contract. We've talked about that before. Ryan Bomben, who they brought over in a trade, is only signed through this year. Ted Laurent, who is, for my money, maybe the best Canadian player in the CFL right now, period, is due for a big raise. Brian Balke, I believe, is in the last year of his contract. And I think Courtney Steven and Frederick Plessius are both two players, you know, Steven a starter, Plessius a special teams and a depth guy, who are also entering the final, or in the final year of their deal. So there could be some room for the Ticats need another Canadian player. And if they could get a guy like Mwamba in here, you know, it might mean some of those players are gone, and it would also help mitigate their losses if they choose to play elsewhere.
Yeah, that's a lot of talent you just listed, you know, a lot of really good Canadian talent. So I saw a tweet from Drew Edwards Hughes saying that maybe it's this move is, you know, look towards next year because they might be losing some Canadian starters. So I think it'd just be a huge signing for them. You know, they probably won't be able to sign all those guys. So, you know, that just adds to the Canadian ratio if they lose someone. So I think it'd be great if he signed with Hamilton. You know, they still has BC and Winnipeg to compete with. BC could sign him, but I'm not sure if he'd want to go there this year because they don't seem to be doing so hot. You know, Hamilton's a team that's on the rise right now. So, you know, I think we have a pretty good chance at signing him.
I think so, too. He wants to get paid handsomely, which he deserves, and he wants a chance to win, period, championships, win games, just be a part of a winner. And this is not meant to be an insult to the BC Lions or the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, but if the money's similar or pretty darn close and your choices are between Hamilton, BC, and Winnipeg, you're probably taking Hamilton right about now, I would think.
Yeah, I think so too.
So we're going to have to keep an eye on that. Obviously, nothing has come out yet. I jokingly said that he would sign immediately after you and I finish recording because that's usually how things go down, but it doesn't look like that's the case. So maybe we'll have some more news on this next week, and maybe old Enoch Mwamba is a Tiger Cat at this time when we record next week. Before we get into the games that happened the rest of the week, I want to sort of tip you off. Did you see a tweet by Manny Arsenault earlier today?
I did not see that tweet.
Okay, so Manny Arsenault, as we talked about last week when I asked you if he was the most disappointing player of the season, has not had a great year. He was not particularly effective against Ottawa yesterday. I don't have his numbers in front of me, but they weren't very good. He was the recipient of some scorn after Antoine Pruneau had an interception on a ball thrown to Arsenault, and it just looked like he didn't even bother trying to catch it. He's taken a lot of heat for that. So I guess he's a little pissed off about it and decided to vent on Twitter, where he said, "Why is it a lot of beat writers and analysts who never played sports talk down on people doing stuff they could never dream of?" Now, this is the type of attitude that pisses me right the fuck off, to be perfectly blunt. Just because I cannot do what he does on the field does not mean that my opinion or your opinion or anyone else's opinion isn't valid. There's a lot of people out there who are TV and movie critics that couldn't write a movie script or a television pilot if their lives depended on it. But you don't see, you know, Steven Spielberg or any sort of director or writer or anything coming out after their movie gets panned and say, "Well, they can't do what I do, so they don't have a right to an opinion." Look, Manny Arsenault can do things that 99.9% of the people on this planet cannot do. But that doesn't mean that those people do not have a right to say, "Look, you sucked out there today." And the thing I don't understand is crap like this. He spews this now after he had a game. He wasn't doing this after he had 100 yards against Ottawa in week two when reporters were saying, "Oh, what a great game Manny Arsenault had." He wasn't saying, "Oh, well, why do I care what they think of me? They don't play this game." It's infuriating. It's insulting. And I lost a lot of respect for Manny Arsenault over saying crap like this.
Yeah, it's the media. That's their job to critique when people don't play well. I mean, it's silly. You know, the media to do? You know, it can't be a former professional football player that fills every job in the media. So that's just a silly comment. You know, it was probably just out of frustration. He's not having a great year. You know, it's tough too when you got, you know, Beck didn't have a very good game either, so he's probably not getting the ball a lot. So he just did it out of frustration, and it was just a stupid comment on Twitter. Time to move on.
Yeah, let's move on. Let's get into these games that happened this week. Now, you went to the game in Edmonton, so you weren't as into the game that happened before the Edmonton-Calgary game, which was...
I saw parts of it, but no, I didn't really see a lot of the game.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, Winnipeg defeated Saskatchewan in the Banjo Bowl 22-7. And there was a play during the game, if you didn't get a chance to see it, I'll sort of lay it out for you. Very similar, actually, to a play that happened in the Hamilton game, the fumble we talked about with Ray Holly and all that sort of stuff. Brett Smith makes a nice run, dashes down the middle of the field, makes a spin move, looks like he's about to slide and doesn't, and falls down, stands up, and flips the ball. And Matt Buckner scoops it right up right away and starts going, and the whistle blows. It was called that Smith was, I believe it was down by contact, and then it was challenged or reviewed in some way. And in watching the replays, they claimed that, I think it was Johnny Adams, may have had his thigh touch Smith's helmet, but it sure looked to me, watching on a 55-inch television in high definition, that what moved Smith's helmet was when it bounced off the ground. It did not look at all to me like Smith was down by contact, and yet they did not get the ball to Winnipeg. It obviously played no role in the outcome of the game, because Winnipeg still managed to get the win. But it was just another sort of mistake by the command center, or at least one that looked like a mistake from my eyes. It was essentially a pretty bad weekend for the refs, don't you think?
Yeah, there was, we've been defending the refs a lot of the year, because a lot of the time it's been the players that have just been committing penalties and they have to make that call when they see it. But this weekend there was a lot of blown calls, I thought. You know, I thought Toronto had, there was a couple penalties against Toronto that just were not worthy of being a penalty, point blank. The reason that the Ticast drives extended was because of those blown calls that the refs made. So, you know, we've been defending them all year, but this weekend they were not good at all.
That might be an understatement. The one play to me in that Hamilton game that we didn't talk about, this we could talk about now since we're talking about the refs. Are you thinking of the Brandon Banks push into the table out of bounds?
Yeah, that was one.
That was absolutely brutal. Initially,
he was trying to hold him up. He was trying to hold him up as he went out of bounds. And, you know, there was no malicious intent or anything like that. So I thought it was just a terrible call.
We were in the stands. Literally, we were probably in the 25th row, almost right above that. We saw it happen. And at first we were like, oh, that's a penalty. Then we looked up at the board when they showed it, and it was like, we all looked at each other, and it was a sea of Ticats fans there. And you kind of saw everyone kind of go, ooh, we got away with one there. That was not a flag. You said, he tried to hold him up. It was more like he tried to help him from falling into that table than shoving him into it.
Yeah, and I think there might have been a pass interference call that wasn't, and maybe a roughing the passer too on Toronto that I think maybe the guy fell and he touched Claro's ankle or something, and it was roughing the passer. You can't hit him low, I get that, but it was just unnecessary calls in my opinion in that game.
Yeah, this call in the Saskatchewan game just sort of solidified how bad this week was for the refs, and at least it wasn't, you know, one team wasn't getting screwed. It was just bad calls all over the place. I just, like I said, there's a 55-inch high-definition television in my basement that I watch games on, and I can't imagine that the CFL Command Center has anything worse than that, you know, or anything better at least. So I don't know where they saw that down by contact, because I sure as heck didn't see it.
Okay, will Nichols turn around Bombers offense until Willie gets back and keep them in contention for a playoff spot?
Keep them in contention for a playoff spot, maybe. I don't know if he's going to turn around the offense. He wasn't that great against Saskatchewan. He had one of his best games, mind you. But I went and looked up the stats, and his two best games have come against Saskatchewan this year, and he doesn't get a chance to play the Riders again. So here's Winnipeg's remainder of the season. So I don't know when Drew Willey's going to be back. Apparently he was off crutches this week, but still hobbling around. So he probably won't be back anytime soon. But Winnipeg is at Montreal this weekend. Then they host Calgary and Edmonton in back-to-back weekends before going to BC and then Ottawa, and then hosting Ottawa and Winnipeg, and then going to Toronto. There's not a whole heck of a lot of winnable games in there, regardless of who the quarterback is for Winnipeg. You know, he still leads the league in interceptions. He's still, as far as I'm concerned, a decent but not great quarterback. So maybe he keeps them afloat, but that's schedule to me is what's going to undo them. Going to Montreal could be, especially after Montreal's coming off a bye week, could be a loss. Then you have the back-to-back against Calgary and Edmonton. I don't care that they're in Winnipeg. They're not going to win either of those games. So if they lose the next three, it's really not going to matter when Willie comes back at all. So I just don't see it. Maybe they get lucky and find a win here or there, but I don't think Nichols can keep them afloat. I think he'll do better than Brian Brohm would, but that's really not saying much.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. You know, it's like you just said, it's a better option than Brohm, but I don't, you know, that's pretty much anyone, not to be too harsh on the guy, but he just hasn't performed well. Nichols is okay. He's not great. He might sneak out a win or two, but they just have to, if Winnipeg's going to contend, it has to be when Willie comes back, and I don't know when that is. So it's going to be a tough going for the Bombers, I think, going forward.
So let's move on to the game you attended. That was quite the rainstorm there. How wet were you when that game was over?
I was completely soaked. It was nice during the day. You know, me and my girlfriend went to some pregame festivities, and it was sunny and beautiful. And then pretty much maybe like 5 minutes into the game, it just started to pour, and it never stopped till out, like right after the game it stopped. And during the whole game it was just downpour. We went down under the stands for a bit to, you know, try to dry off, and then came back up for a little bit of the third and the fourth. But it was just, you know, I've never been to a game that had that much rain. It was pretty bad.
There was one game here, I believe it was also against Edmonton, but it may have been against Calgary. I think it was 2010, maybe 2011, maybe 2009, one of those 3 years in there where the Ticats were playing one of those Alberta teams, and it just pissed rain, and we were soaked to the bone. I don't think I'd ever been that wet in my life, and we were just drenched. The Ticats won, so we were like, well, at least we sat through the rain and they won the game. But yeah, I've had to sit through one of those monsoon games before, and they are not fun. Not fun at all.
It's too bad, because I thought Mike Riley played really well, you know, coming in his first start in a long time, even with the downpour. So hopefully the next game we go to isn't a torrential downpour the whole game.
I hope for that for your sake as well, my friend. However, in that game, there were a couple of roughing the kicker calls on punters. Now, one was, I don't know if you've seen the video of it, but one was on Rob Maver, and that was maybe the worst roughing the kicker call I've ever seen.
Total flop on Maver's part.
Not just a flop, but the Edmonton guy was thrown into him by the Calgary player. And then there was one earlier on, is it Sean White that does the punting for Edmonton? Yeah, he's the kicker punter there now, correct? There was one on him that I thought was a bit questionable, if you will. So I ask you this, you know, in light of both of those plays, should roughing the kicker be subject to review?
I think it should. You know, it's, if it happens, it's such a big swing. You know, the team that's kicking the ball gets the ball back. So, I mean, it's a huge penalty. It can be manipulated by the kicker, you know, with some acting. So I think it should be reviewable, because it's such a big swing if that happens, you know?
I think it should be reviewable as well. It's one of those instances where it's cut and dry. Either the guy hit the kicker or he didn't, and you can go back and look on video review and see whether or not it happened. You could also have seen an instance where, like I said in the Maver play, the Edmonton guy was thrown into by the Calgary play. You can reverse these decisions. They have made pass interference, which is a lot more subjective than roughing the kicker, is a reviewable play. So I don't see any reason why the CFL shouldn't have roughing the kicker be subject to video review. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's something they should look into for sure. Now, how much is the absence of Cornish hurting Calgary's offense?
Well, obviously not having an all-star tailback always hurts whatever team he's on. He's, when healthy, the best running back in the CFL. It means that teams don't have to respect the run as much. As good as Matt Walter has been, he's had some nice runs. He's had a good game or two. He's not John Cornish, so teams really don't have to respect him as much as they would Cornish, which means the receivers are getting covered better or tighter, and there's more guys in coverage, so it's a lot harder for Mitchell to get the ball out there. And even having said that, Oliva Mitchell's having a pretty good year, and Eric Rogers is killing people every week. So the thing is, Calgary's, you know, they're still 8-3, they're still first in the West, and they spend a significant portion of last year without Cornish either. They definitely miss him because he adds a dimension to the team that is not there, but I think Calgary's just so darn good that even without him, they still managed to, you know, hum along.
You know, they, especially the last two games, games. You know, Edmonton's great defense, but I expected more out of Calgary, you know, offensive-wise. I think Cornish is a big loss, obviously, but I still think they have, you know, good running backs back there that can be productive. So I think it might be partly, you know, the losses on the offensive line. You know, Brett Jones goes to the NFL. They lose Stanley Bryant to the Bombers. So those are two big pieces of that O-line. And even though I think that the people that have been filling in for them have been doing a good job, it just, you know, it's not the same talent level that they had last year. And I also think that Bolieva Mitchell isn't having a spectacular year. He's just, he had some good games, but for the most part, he hasn't, you know, he's overthrowing a lot of receivers. He's not having the year that I thought he would have after that spectacular Grey Cup game. So I think it's a combination of things in Calgary that, you know, they're 8-3 and they're atop the West, but I don't think they've played their best football yet this season.
You brought up the offensive line. Not only did they lose those guys during the offseason, but they were decimated with injuries early in the year. I believe they were dressing a defensive lineman as an offensive lineman at one point because of how injured guys were. So we're going to get Cornish is apparently going to be coming back pretty darn soon. So we're going to get a good indication of whether it's Cornish, the lack of Cornish, or that offensive line that's sort of causing troubles for Calgary's rushing attack. And, you know, even all that said, they're still fifth in the league in rushing and just 2 yards a game behind Edmonton and Winnipeg for third. So it's sort of hard. Calgary, for me, essentially gets the benefit of the doubt most weeks. And until proven otherwise, they're still the best team in the West as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, kudos to Edmonton for finally breaking that streak against the Stamps. But I think we're going to see those two teams meet up once again much later in the year, and hopefully both teams will be as healthy as possible, because I think that matchup is going to be a good one.
Yeah, I fully expect them to be in the Western Final battling out to go to the Grey Cup. So yeah, I agree that I want to see them both healthy, and I just want to see a great game in the West Final if it's those two teams there. So
the surprise of the week, I think, at least according to me, was Ottawa going over to BC, and bad as BC has been, Ottawa went in there and beat the Lions down. Now, as I said earlier, this game was on Sunday, so I was clicking back and forth. I didn't get to see a ton of it. I did get to see a fair enough to be able to, you know, talk intelligently about it. But Brad Sinopoli, man, this has sort of been his breakout campaign. He has 44 catches for 523 yards. He is far and away the leading Canadian pass catcher. The next guys closest to him are running backs in Jerome Messam and Andrew Harris. So I gotta wonder, is he right now the best Canadian receiver in the Canadian Football League?
Yeah, I think he is. He's been impressing me all year long. He's making those tough catches. He's getting yak yards, because that's a stupid saying, but he's making plays, he's getting open, he's making every catch. So I think he is the best receiver in the league, and he's a receiver. He's not a quarterback anymore, Rod Black, so stop calling him a quarterback. He's a receiver now. We get it. He used to play quarterback for the GGs. Just enough with that. Yes, I think he's the best receiver in the league right now. Well, the best Canadian receiver.
Yikes, you got some fire in your belly about this one.
I know, it just bugs me. Every game, it's former quarterback of the Ottawa GGs. We know, we get it. And last game, he was like, that's a quarterback out there making those catches. No, he's not a quarterback anymore. He's a receiver now. So enough.
I agree. Enough. And I too think he is right now the best Canadian receiver in the league. Whether he would be if Andy Fantuz had stayed healthy, I don't know, because Fantuz was on pace to put up some monster numbers this year, but Fantuz isn't healthy. So we're not in the game of wondering what if. We're talking about what is. And right now, Brad Sinopoli, to me, is head and shoulders above every other Canadian pass catcher in the CFL.
I totally agree. He just keeps making plays game after game. And now, speaking of the Ottawa receivers, do you believe that as a unit, they are the best in the league right now, talent-wise?
Okay, so this is a bit contentious, because I know there's people out there that are not going to like this answer, but it is unequivocally no. When you sent this to me before the show, I knew that a mutual friend of ours, Fender guy, Mark, had sort of gotten into it a little bit with some Ottawa fans about how good Ottawa's receivers was, and he put some numbers together for me. He put some numbers together for himself, of which I have since asked for, and he gave them to me, and they don't really paint the Ottawa receiving corps in that great a light. Now, this is all talking about passing numbers. Now, obviously that has a little bit to do with the quarterback. sure, but it also has to do with the receivers. So, Ottawa right now, their receivers are tied for 7th in passing TDs. They only have 10. They've played 10 games. That's an average of 1 a game. That's not very good. The Red Blacks are in 2nd in pass attempts, which kind of floors me. But while they're 2nd in pass attempts, they have 14 fewer touchdowns than a team like the Ticats, who are 1st in passing touchdowns. And teams say the Ticats are a pass-happy offense, but Ottawa, with 1 fewer game played, has thrown the ball more than Hamilton. Ottawa is 7th in yards per pass. Their TD percentage is last in the league, and that means for every pass they've thrown, the percentages of passes that they've thrown that have resulted in touchdowns, they are the last in the league. So Mark took a look at, I believe it's 18 or 20 different passing categories. He averaged them out, and Ottawa finishes with an overall rank of 6th. The far and away best passing team in the league is Hamilton, with Toronto, Calgary, and I believe it's Saskatchewan and Edmonton all sort of being clustered in there, still better than Ottawa. So, like I said, to start this question, no. I think they have a talented receiving core, no doubt, and they are a very dangerous receiving unit, but the numbers simply just say that they are not the best unit in the league. It's apparently Hamilton's.
The numbers bear it out. I mean, they're not the best right now. I think they have the potential to maybe be the best, you know. Mo Price had a really tough start to the season with dropping balls. I think he's getting better now. I think Ellingson is one of the most underrated receivers in the league. Sinopoli, like we just said, is the best Canadian receiver in the league. Chris Williams hasn't been outstanding this year, but he's always a threat. And then Jackson is a dependable guy too, so I don't think they're the best right now, but I think they have the potential, if they keep playing the way they are, to be the best in the second half of the season.
No, I won't disagree with that. I think that they definitely have the talent to be the best, but as I said, the numbers just simply don't bear it out right now. They're a good unit. They have the potential to be a very dangerous unit, but right now they're average at best, and you know, that's the best way I can answer it, to be honest with you. Shall we move on to the big game that is coming up on Saturday at Tim Hortons Field? The Edmonton Eskimos will be heading to Hamilton for what I think is going to be one hell of a contest. I know Hamilton went out to Edmonton and laid a beating on the Eskimos. I don't see that happening a second time. Edmonton's going to have Mike Riley back. This looks to me like it's going to be a duel between two of the league's outstanding quarterbacks, and I, for one, am super looking forward to this game.
Yeah, it's the marquee matchup of the weekend for sure. I don't think it's going to be a blowout like last time in Edmonton. You know, they had Nichols there. He didn't perform well in that game. Franklin came in and played pretty well against the Ticat defense. So I think it's going to be a close game. I think Riley's going to have a good game. I think it's going to be a very entertaining game. So I'm stoked for this game as well. I can't wait to watch it.
I want to see if the running game can continue to produce, again, not massive numbers like we talked about before, but pretty good numbers. I want to see if they can find some success against what is a very, 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 very good Edmonton defense.
It's going to be tough. They're playing at a high rate. The last two games against Calgary, they really did a great job against a good offense. So, you know, it could be a low-scoring game, or the Ticats played really well against them last time, so maybe both teams put up some points in a surprising shootout. It's really hard to predict how this game's going to go. So I'm just, you know, Saturday, what is it, 5 o'clock start in Hamilton, or 4 o'clock start?
4 o'clock start.
Yeah, so I'm just going to be, I think it's doubleheader on that day, so it's just going to be a great day of football.
I'm also wondering if the offensive line can continue their stellar play. They were pretty good in both games against Toronto. The Argos defensive line had a bit more success on Friday as they did on Labor Day, and they were really good against Edmonton. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they kept that vaunted pass rush to 0 sacks, so they've got their work cut out for them, but I'm kind of wondering, you know, at home where Hamilton obviously plays better, if they can sort of keep that Edmonton pass rush at bay.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's probably the best in the league, so it's going to be a challenge. You know, they did great against them in the game before. Like you said, they did good against Toronto twice, and then had some hiccups against Montreal with 6 sacks, so they got to be good week after week after week if they're going to win a championship. So this is a real test for the Hamilton's O-line.
I think it's also a test for Hamilton's defensive backs. That Edmonton receiving group of Darrell Walker, Adarius Bowman, and Kenny Stafford is as good a threesome as any team lines up out there. So I'm curious to see, especially with Mike Riley back there, how Edmonton's passing offense does against Hamilton's vaunted defense.
Stafford had a big touchdown in the game against Calgary on Saturday, so...
Bowman had two,
and Walker, you know, he was off to that torrid pace in his first couple games. He slowed down a bit, but he's still a big threat out there. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if the secondary can keep them contained. Riley's, you know, had really good numbers on Saturday in a really wet game. So, if the weather's nice, then I expect Riley to have another big game. So yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be a great game. It's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, it could be a Grey Cup preview. I know we said that a few weeks ago when Edmonton and Hamilton played, but I still think that this could be the two teams we see battling it out at the end. So I am, as I said, super looking forward to this one. So you ready to give some bold predictions for Saturday's contest?
Yeah, let's do it. We were just talking about how it's going to be interesting to see how the run game performs. So I'm going to go with Holly. You know, I'm not going to go too bold. I'm going to say, well, it's kind of bold, I guess. 75 yards rushing and 50 yards receiving and a touchdown.
Oh, okay. That I would say that's pretty bold. Yeah. I don't believe he's had 50 yards receiving in any game or 75 yards rushing, but he does seem to get action both ways. And if he can break one, that could be... Oh, you know what? I'm wrong. Holly had like 80-something yards on Labor Day, didn't he?
Yeah, I think because of the late
big 40-yard run at the end there.
Yeah.
All right. So I take that back. Holly has had over 75 rushing yards in a game. So I was going to go with Ray Holly, but I went with him last week, so I decided to go a little different. And mine is that the Ticats defense will force the Eskimos into 4 turnovers. And I'm not talking about turnovers on downs. I'm talking about interceptions and fumbles. I just want to make that clear because, you know, the Ticats, I know they are the top team in the league at forcing teams off the field on third down. I think it's 13 or 14 times this season they have stuffed teams on third down. So I'm not talking about turnovers on downs. I'm talking about legit turnovers, your interceptions, your fumbles. Ticats defense will force 4 of those on Saturday against the Eskimos.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Should we get to our Twitter questions of the week?
Yeah, let's do this.
Okay, fire them off.
I got one from USFL Tecmo, or buddy Joe. Who was your pick to sneak into that third playoff spot at West?
Calgary and Edmonton, 1 and 2, in whichever order. Obviously, they're getting in. Now we have a bit of a battle. I said last week, and I think I said the week before, and I maybe even said the week before that it's going to be Montreal. I'm sticking with the Alouettes. I think they cross over. I think they're good enough to be better than both BC and Winnipeg. Saskatchewan at 1 and 10 is out of it. Let's not even bother talking about them. Going with the Alouettes. Alouettes go cross over into the West.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. You know, BC's not doing it for me. Winnipeg could be better if Willie was in there. I think, you know, he changes everything if he's in the game. So I'm going to go with Montreal. I think they got a solid team. I think if Cato can play that the way that he played in the first couple games, he got a start in. They're a good team. This is the first year that the East is going to cross over, so I'm going to go with Montreal as well.
Yeah, a lot to me depends on when Cato comes back. I'm not even sure if he's going to play this week. I thought I saw something out there earlier today about Cato. They don't know when he's coming back. I guess there was a big family emergency of his. Relative got in a car crash or something.
Yeah, that's what I heard, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if he's not back for this game. And here's the thing. With all three of these teams we're talking about, BC, Winnipeg, and Montreal, none of them really have a quarterback, or at least they don't have the quarterback they thought they would have at the beginning of the season. Lule's going to be out for a month. Willie's out for who knows how long. And if Tanner Marsh has got to be in there for Montreal, they're not going to win many ball games either. So, you know, we might get a really good indication. I believe, isn't it? It's Winnipeg at Montreal this week, so we might get a really good indication if Winnipeg can sort of make that their spot to lose. If they lose to the Alouettes this week, especially if it's Tanner Marsh starting at quarterback for Montreal, I don't think Winnipeg will be able to bounce back from that because, like we discussed earlier, their schedule is pretty darn difficult. So we're both in agreement here on the Alouettes then.
Yeah, it's a really tough call, though, because, like you said, all three teams have question marks at quarterbacks, and that's, you know, the most important position on the football team, so it's a really tough call to pick that spot, but a good question from Joe. I got another one from Canes Eagles. Out of Montreal and Calgary, which team do you think gives the Ticats trouble down the road?
You know what? This isn't really much to think about. I'm going to say Calgary simply because there's a better chance of Hamilton seeing Calgary when it matters most, and that is at the end of November in Winnipeg in the Grey Cup. Montreal might give them trouble in their matchup later in October, but Montreal is not going to see Hamilton in the playoffs, I don't think. Ottawa and Toronto, I think, are going to finish, like we just finished saying, we think Montreal's going to go over to the West and play there. So I don't see Montreal running the table if they become the third team in the West, going through Edmonton and Calgary in whichever order they end up finishing. So I got to say Calgary because there's a better chance of Calgary and Hamilton meeting in the Grey Cup, and that's when it matters most. Whereas Montreal probably only sees Hamilton once more this year.
Yeah, it's tough. Montreal's had the Ticats number this year, 2 wins. I think they play again, like you said, they play again late in the season. So yeah, I'm going to go with Calgary too. I think we play them them once more, and then it could be, you know, if keep your fingers crossed, a Grey Cup rematch. So I'm going to go with Calgary as well. They've been underperforming a bit this year, but I think they'll get it together and, you know, maybe be in that Grey Cup rematch. So I got to go with Calgary.
So I got a question, and it's a bit of a lighthearted one, which is how we will end the show this week. Gregory asked, how do you feel about the Argos buying the Ticats car? Now, for people that don't know, there was a Ticats fan who had an automobile decked out in Ticats logos, and there were some autographs on the hood of the car and on the trunk of the car or something, and he put it up on, I think it was Kijiji, and the Argos bought it for $500, and then Friday's game, they let people come down, pay a little money to paint it over it, paint it blue, write Argos on it, and all the money went to charity. So, how do you feel about the Argos buying that car and then defacing it the way they did?
You know, it kind of sucks, but, you know, it doesn't bother me too much. Kind of a fun thing that the Argos did. It went to charities, so he can't really complain about it, you know, a ton. So I don't really have a big problem with it.
No, I don't have a problem with it either. It's, you know, it's all in good fun. It's an automobile. It's not someone's life. It's not anything important. This guy got money for the car that he wouldn't have got, and then a charity got a bunch of money. So I'm not sure what charity it was, but I'm sure it was for a good cause. So no harm, no foul as far as I'm concerned. A little bit of gamesmanship between the two teams, between the two rivals. And, you know, that's what makes this stuff fun.
Yeah, exactly. I remember, you know, Ticats getting an Argos car or something and smashing it before some games on Labor Day. Maybe it was in years past. I can't remember exactly what year, but do you remember that at all?
I don't, actually. Maybe that was during sort of the lost years of my fandom. Was it when the Ticats were really bad?
Could have been.
Yeah.
I just remember someone, you know, smashing up a car in Argos colors or something like that.
But. I know, that does sound familiar. And I remember when this came out, people were saying, oh, are they going to give people $5? You get a couple swings with a hammer. So, yeah, you know what? Now that you mention it, now that I think about it, it does sort of sound familiar. I don't think I was there for it, but yeah, that does sort of ring a bell now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, so just a bit of fun for the rivalry, you know, a little added stuff to the rivalry, so it's all good.
Yeah, and they can't beat us on the field, so they got to beat us with these promotions, so let them have it.
You know, it's a sweep this year, so it's all good.
The rare sweep this year. First time they've done it since 2010, and the Ticats had never swept the Labor Day rematch, you know, the back-to-back there. So it's a lot of things happening for the Ticats this year that have never happened before, which gives me the warmest of feelings in my belly. So I'm very happy right now.
Yeah, the Ticats 8-3, and we swept the Argos. So you can't, I don't have much to complain about if you're a Ticats fan, that's for sure.
Absolutely, buddy, absolutely. So that's it then. Don't forget that you can subscribe to this lovely podcast on iTunes, and if you want to have your questions answered like the gentleman who sent them in this week, you can always hit Mike or myself up on Twitter. Mike, give him your handle.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am at @JoshSmith_82, and like Gregory did, please feel free to post your questions in the comments section on 3Down Nation when this goes up. Again, always, we're looking for feedback, criticisms, constructive criticisms, and Mike's still looking, I'm sure, to be called an idiot. Are you still looking to be called an idiot, Mike?
Still looking for it.
Alright.
I guess it's a good thing that I haven't been.
Alright, someone else out there, call him an idiot. He's waiting for it. He's fiending for it.
I am.
That is Podski Wee Wee for this week. I am Josh Smith.
I am Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.